Hello and welcome back to the Electronic Intifada podcast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. In January, the city of Hayward, California passed a resolution to divest $1.6 million in investments from four corporations that do business with the Israeli occupation: Caterpillar, Chevron, Hyundai, and Intel. Joining us to talk about how they did it and why it's a significant victory for the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement are several activists involved with the campaign in Hayward. Alexis Villalobos and George Sirup co-founded the Hayward Community Coalition in 2020 to organize in response to the murder of George Floyd and to prevent school closures and improve tenant protections in their hometown. Alexis is also a labor and community organizer, and George was elected to the Hayward City Council in 2022, where he continues to fight against displacement as the council's only renter. And Noam Perry is the strategic research coordinator of the American Friends Service Committee's Action Center for Corporate Accountability. He coordinates the Investigate Project, researching corporate complicity in state violence and human rights violations, including the U.S. prison, border and surveillance industries, as well as military occupation and apartheid in Palestine. Thank you all for being with us today on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start by laying out why Hayward activists chose to pressure the city council into divestment, which is a material consequence of Israel's apartheid and occupation, especially during this genocide in Gaza, and especially at a time when other city councils are having a hard time passing even very watered down or symbolic resolutions for a ceasefire. Alexis, do you want to begin?
Sure. Well, I think it goes back to our founding in 2020. We got organized, like you said, in response to the murder of George Floyd. And a lot of the thinking behind starting HACOC, or the Hayward Community Coalition, was that we saw in Hayward, which is an otherwise very politically sleepy town, there's not a lot of political activism going on in Hayward. We saw a lot of very angry, a lot of very active people, the community becoming activated, going to rallies, showing up, marching in the streets. And we knew that we had to organize the energy, not let it fizzle out. And so we organized the energy around what solutions people wanted back then. And the solutions kept pointing towards having direct control over the funding. Where's the money, like following the money, how money is being spent in the police system in Hayward, how money is being not allocated to community services, and focusing on that. And we got really good at that. We got good at moving hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years to make sure that we are divesting, in a sense, from over-policing of our communities and investing in community solutions. And so when we saw this happening, after October 7th, and we saw the horrible bombing and the siege on Gaza starting, we were thinking, what can we do? What are we able to do in this moment, in this very large global issue that is, you know, goes far beyond, you know, the city of Hayward? Well, we knew that we were really good at moving money around. So we thought, how do we follow the money here in Hayward? What can we do here in Hayward that would have a material impact? And by doing some research, we saw that in 1985, the city of Hayward divested from companies that were complicit in the apartheid of South Africa. We saw that there was precedent to do this. And we said, you know what, this is where we're going to go. We looked at the BDS website to figure out which targets we would need to look at. We found which companies were on the BDS list, looked them up in our investment portfolio, which George will have a better time explaining how all that works, and you know, set our target on those companies, and decided we're going to organize the community to move that money, and that's what we did.
And yeah, George, as a member of the Hayward City Council, what access to that kind of portfolio investment information did you have, and why was it important for you as a member of the council to get this passed?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So I'll start by saying the city of Hayward does a great job with making its information publicly available. So it's actually quite difficult to find investment portfolios for cities across the country, but Hayward put forward its list of companies in a pretty straightforward manner on its website. I also serve on the city's budget and finance committee. And so I was aware that the total amount we had invested was about $250 million. And the companies we were looking at on the BDS list only totaled about $1.6 million of that total investment portfolio. And so, you know, I really struggled to put a ceasefire resolution on the table because we were limited as a council because of a resolution passed in 77 saying we can't comment on issues that don't affect the direct administration of the city or fall within our jurisdiction. And, you know, I think that's a little bit subjective. I think that our tax dollars do affect our administration. And if our tax dollars are funding a genocide, that's a problem that involves me and my residents, especially when our schools are closing and our hospitals are facing financial collapse. I mean, you know, I said in my divestment speech that every bomb dropped could be a teacher's salary. So I digress, but I was still limited by that policy from 77. So instead, that's why we pivoted towards a divestment policy instead, because this did impact our direct administration. This was within our jurisdiction. And beyond just being a member of the council, I'm still a member of the Hayward community. And beyond the fiscal arguments, we had several Palestinian residents, neighbors, and their friends coming out saying that it is unconscionable for us to be directly funding the genocide of their own family members. And rather than say, you know, ceasefire, which we've seen several cities do, and we tried to do in Hayward, which fell on deaf ears, we were tired of begging and saying, you know, what power do we actually have to not be complicit and make a material difference and a material change right now, and hopefully inspire other agencies and other organizations and institutions to do the same.
Can you talk a little bit more about your constituency and how involved the community was in getting this passed?
Yeah, this wouldn't have passed without the community. The constituency of Hayward is very working class, and I would also say a little politically disorganized, similar to what Alexis said. You know, we are a politically sleepy town, but one of the goals of the Hayward Community Coalition is to develop and build that base. And so one of the reasons we felt we were successful in our divestment action is it wasn't just the self-selected activists that were coming out and yelling at the council. These were members of our community, not just members that we know, but members that other council members know too. It's a lot harder to say no to an ask from the community when it's, you know, rather than an activist, somebody that you taught or someone that you went to school with or someone that you work with. And we really leveraged those relationships to demonstrate that this isn't just a handful of, you know, radical lefties, but this is a strongly felt issue that's impacting people directly. And we want to see our city take material action.
And Alexis, can you talk a little bit about any pushback that you faced while trying to organize this and how you handled that?
I think in terms of the pushback, George covered a bit of the early pushback. I mean, we started making these demands in December. And so the pushback that we started getting was that that this would cause, I almost feel terrible repeating them because like it was hard to hear this. It felt like just logical gymnastics. We got calls from like former council members and city leaders saying that pushing for this was gonna increase Islamophobia in our city, that it was gonna increase anti-Semitism, and that for those is gonna hurt certain people's feelings, like those sort of arguments, and trying to really discourage us from making these pushes. And you know, the way we handled that was by understanding the logic, or at least the flawed logic in those arguments, and explaining that to community members when we were organizing and asking them to stand up, that these are the arguments that are gonna be made against you and against us, that we are hateful, that we are risking more hateful things to happen here. And just sort of in a way preparing people to know that that's what's gonna happen, and we're gonna need to stay steadfast in this fight and not let that distract us. And so that's how we handled it, is just understanding what those counter arguments are gonna be and preparing the community for them and to know that they're coming.
The best defense is an offense. Yeah, exactly. Noam, I want to bring you in. Tell us about the significance of this $1.6 million divestiture from these four companies, which have been longtime targets of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Tell us about how Caterpillar, Chevron, Hyundai, and Intel help Israel reinforce its illegal occupation and apartheid system, and how those companies are assisting in the genocide of Gaza right now.
Yeah, thank you for that question. You know, these four companies do different things in Palestine, as you probably know. Intel is the largest private employer in Israel, even though it's a U.S. company. It doesn't have any direct relationship or business operations in the occupied Palestinian territories, as far as we know. But it's still a major player in Israeli economy. Hyundai, of course, makes heavy machinery that Israel uses to demolish Palestinian homes as collective punishment all over the West Bank, as well as Caterpillar. Caterpillar has a more intense involvement because it weaponizes its bulldozers for Israel, those famous D9 bulldozers, or infamous, I should say, D9 bulldozers. Right now, we see Caterpillar bulldozers in Gaza working alongside Israeli battle tanks, flattening entire Palestinian residential neighborhoods. I don't know if you saw, there's a new so-called highway that Israeli is building in the middle of the Gaza Strip, dissecting it to north and south. So Caterpillar equipment is central to doing that kind of engineering work. The fourth company, Chevron, of course, is a major player in the Israeli energy sector. It operates and partially owns two major gas fields in the Eastern Mediterranean, off the shores, off the coast of Israel. This is gas, natural gas, that should belong to the Palestinian people. And instead, it flows into Israel, powers Israeli cities, including illegal settlements in the West Bank, powers military bases all over Israel. I know that the gas that is provided by Chevron to the Israeli electrical company, which is the government supplier, forms about 98% of the gas that it uses. So it's a major player. It's involved in potentially pillage. And the BDS movement actually just launched a boycott campaign against Chevron that my organization is proud to be part of, specifically because of these activities. We're calling Chevron to end its complicity in Israeli apartheid. Now, the significance of this divestment, first of all, the things that Hayward was invested in is bonds, right? Bonds are essentially loans that we give to companies and then we get returns on. And I think there's a question that we should be asking ourselves, which companies do we want to give loans to? You know, when we give loans to a company, that means that we enable it to do further business. That's the essential relationship of the bond. And so we need to ask ourselves if those things that the company does are things that we want to endorse and we want to finance. I don't think there's an immediate, you know, financial implication. These are not astronomical funds of money. Hayward is a small city. This is not a major investment. So I don't think we expect there to be any financial implication immediately on these four companies. But the symbolic effect is huge. And I think this hurts the company's reputation. This potentially could harm their ability to borrow more money from other institutional lenders. And this harms overall their reputation and their ability to have social capital to continue doing their business around the world. The major significance here is that Hayward, as far as I know, is the first city that has done this thing. And I know because we tried for many years to have cities take action against certain corporations through divestment and other ways. And we haven't been successful so far until Hayward. And I, on the one hand, I'm very proud. On the other hand, I'm kind of dismayed that this is what it took. You know, it takes a genocide, apparently, for cities to start paying attention.
Yeah, and you know, here in the Bay Area, Hayward is in the Bay Area. For those who don't know, there have been sustained protests against Chevron. There was a major shareholders meeting, I think, last month in February, where people were protesting, people coming out of some big, you know, event, and then there was also a major protest at the Chevron refinery in Richmond. Does this victory against these four companies, including Chevron, has it inspired other activist organizations in other cities around California, but also around the state? Like, have you heard of any other city councils taking up this divestment action yet?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked. I don't know if city councils that are actually debating this right now, there might be. I mean, there are thousands of cities in the United States. I know there are activists that have contacted me and trying to figure out, oh, wait, how did Hayward do this? And can we maybe replicate this? So I know I'm actively working with activists in several cities, and I invite our viewers and listeners here, if you want help to strategize around a city divestment campaign, we're here to support you. We also work with students and faculty and other types of investors on that. But I want to take a step back and say something broader, because you mentioned, Nora, in the beginning, the dozens of ceasefire resolutions that have passed in cities and other bodies around the country. And these are great. Of course, we should all call for a ceasefire. That's a no-brainer. And what Palestinian civil society has called on all of us to do almost 20 years ago now, in 2005, is to do more than that, is to, in a way, it's a much simpler ask. You know, it's not to comment on something that's happening somewhere far away in another part of the world, which is what a call for a ceasefire does, but it's looking at our own complicity and relationships to what's happening over there, right? Like George said, you know, some cities might be limited in what they can, how they can comment on things that are not affecting themselves, but our money is our money. And we should have a say about where it goes, you know, and that's exactly what the BDS call was asking us to do, to look at our relationships and how we might be involved in apartheid, in genocide, in military occupation in Palestine, and to use these ties to try to create change, right? So cities might have investments in some companies. By the way, Investigate is a website that you can look at to find a list of companies that you should divest from, or your city should divest from. But cities can have other relationships, relationships with corporations, right? Like procurement relationships or other types of contracts that cities might have with certain corporations that we want to pressure. I know a lot of cities in the United States have kind of sister city relationships with Israeli cities. So of course, these are all symbolic, but it means something, you know, it means something when we say, oh, we're a sister city of Ashkelon, for example, which is very close to the Gaza Strip. And what does it mean right now to be a sister city of a city in a country that engages in genocide? Some cities might be invested in Israel bonds, which of course directly funds the Israeli government. And so I think the starting point is to figure out those connections and what is possible. And each city is different, each city is unique, it has its own politics, it has its own background, it has its own connections to Israeli apartheid. And one thing I can suggest to everyone, we have a platform called Apartheid Free Communities. It's at apartheidfree.org, and it invites any institution. It can be a city, it can be a student group, it can be a university, it can be a church or other faith organization, invites us to pledge to become apartheid free. And we're not exactly telling you how to do that. You know, that's not our job, that's your job, right? So you can pledge to become apartheid free, and then hopefully that inspires a process that helps you figure out, okay, where are my connections to apartheid, and how can I remove myself from that harmful situation?
Thanks, Noam. Alexis and George, how important is it for you personally as activists in Hayward to, you know, do something to affect change, to build, you know, and organize your community in defense of Palestinians and against the U.S.'s complicity in this genocide? Alexis, let's start with you.
I would say I have two thoughts on this. I think one of them is that myself as an organizer and activist, like, I see myself as a huge optimist, and it's very incredibly difficult to find optimism when you're seeing a genocide being live streamed, but it's a challenge at the same time to find out what can I do to make something happen here. And to be able to find that and to tackle it and to see some movement was incredibly important to me. And it's important to me to think of this as, like, as Noam said, like, to be very aware that the city of Hayward is small, but this could set off like a snowball effect. Like, hopefully it does. That's our biggest hope, is that the word gets out, that we're out here spreading this word, that this is possible, you can replicate this, you can be apartheid free, and that collectively we can divest enough to really put that pressure on. That's what my fingers are crossed for. And we'll continue to work for. My other thought is that, you know, we started this work being very clear-eyed that that the response to the murder of George Floyd was not simply about, you know, punishing bad apples in the police department, but it was about the liberation of Black people in the United States. And to find that movement and that fight and that struggle for liberation of people of color here in the US is completely tied to the liberation of Palestinian people in Gaza, in the West Bank, the connection between the militarized police state, the incarceration system, the profiteering of these systems, and how much of those issues are connected. This issue is incredibly important to me and to us as an organization. It's not really reaching. It's related. It is part of what we've been doing since 2020. I think that's what I'll say.
Yeah, I think Alexis hit the nail on the head there. It was incredibly well put. I think speaking for myself, you know, I feel incredibly grateful for the role that I'm able to hold on the city council because of my community's belief in myself. And I find the work that I do there on a regular basis very meaningful. But this action in particular, you know, being raised in a system that seems so gargantuan and so difficult to move and so difficult to change, and feeling like so much struggle is required to even move the needle just a little bit. Is it even possible to move the needle? When we were able to pull this off, I really felt like I was living in real time one of the most meaningful days of my entire life when we as a community got the council to narrowly approve this divestment in a 4-3 split vote. And, you know, when I was a kid, I was in the streets with my parents protesting the Iraq War and US imperialism. And, you know, I've been really dismayed to see the Democratic Party become a party of warmongers and buy into the military-industrial complex. And I'll save my critiques for the Democratic Party another time because I have plenty of those. But what I will say is that, you know, I was under the impression that the military-industrial complex is a problem. And what this vote also represented to me was a moment for us collectively to put a dent in this machine and to show people what it takes to do that. And I've been elated at the amount of support from all over the country, organizers in St. Louis and on the East Coast, people within their unions trying to figure out how to divest their union dollars, students across California. I think Riverside just divested their student union funds. I think Davis divested $16 million. There are all these institutions that are starting to say, wait, we do have power. We can do something. We don't just have to beg. We don't just have to be ignored. We can take matters into our own hand. And so seeing how other people are collectively raising their consciousness around material impact and building power to have a material impact really is invigorating for me. And to be able to do that in Little Hayward feels like such a blessing. So I'm just incredibly proud of all my co-organizers and the people that are heeding this call to action and really, you know, continuing to push this forward.
And if people do want to replicate this in their own communities, Alexis, what are some of the first steps?
So I think some of the first steps is to start thinking about what relationships you already have. Like, I think, George, when you were speaking, it reminded me of how good it felt to be able to do this, not just in my work, but like with people I grew up with, like people I know, people who are students with me, people who are my teachers, people who, you know, make pizza down the street at their local business, are like, they're out here doing this together. And so I guess what my point here is to start with the people you know, start with the relationships you have, and to start making an organization. What that means when I say that is to make a commitment towards a goal, towards a target, whether that is reforming the police in your city, whether that's getting more funding to your community services, whatever that might be, those common goals. Like, start by making sure that there is some sort of cohesion and some sort of collaboration going on in your city. And that way, when these issues come up, when you want to target these bigger issues, when you already have a base, you already have people who you can rely on and who understand what it means to stick to a plan, to make asks, to go and struggle together. So I would say, like, start with the relationships you have. If you're already in an organization, like, hey, Coco, I think in 2020, we didn't imagine this is what we would be doing in 4 years, but we didn't have to reinvent an entire new organization, a new mission statement to be able to do this. Start with organizations that you already exist. So if you already have that in your community, think about what organizations, what structures already exist that you can leverage or turn attention to these issues. I think that I would start there with thinking about what relationships you already have, bringing them together if they're not already organized, and where they are already organized, redirecting the attention and the energy towards this issue.
George, did you want to add to that?
I think Alexis hit the nail on the head. He's a really talented organizer. I think there's also an element of research that's required. We found just through one of our members doing some investigation on their own, this 1985 resolution against apartheid South Africa. And that precedent we felt was really valuable to see, hey, this has been done before. And the city of Hayward already has in its policy that we don't invest in nuclear weapons. And so that helped build the case. And then, we tried to ask for a ceasefire in December and didn't get that. But we also asked for divestment at the same time and were able to come back in January and push for that. And so I say all this because I think the narrative is really important too. As you're bringing folks together and you're pushing, you might not get what you want on the first ask, but I think how you show people that systems of power are ignoring you and how you show people that you're being told, no, we won't stop being complicit in the face of a genocide, gets more people riled up, gets more people agitated. So in addition to building these structures, really being mindful of what the narrative is as you're fighting for, ultimately justice. Before I forget, I really want to thank Noam and his team at the AFSC for the research that they did. I mean, if it wasn't for their prerequisite research, we wouldn't have known which companies to target in our divestment action. This is truly a collective effort that extends beyond the boundaries of Hayward, which is itself, a territory on colonial land, if we want to go there. I just want to encourage folks that it's important to bring folks together and do that work to make the most compelling argument. We were very specific about these companies, not just because of the BDS list, but because narratively the ask was so reasonable to divest less than 1% of our portfolio to not be complicit in genocide, especially when Hayward prides itself on being a green city and we have money parked in Chevron. It's what are we doing here? Why isn't anybody speaking up, right? So narratively, how could you say no? I think really being mindful of that is important because beyond just the organizers and the community coming together to ask, there's also the court of public opinion. And when you're bringing together a coalition, you're trying to win over more folks in that court. So I just wanted to throw that out there too.
Thanks for that. And Noam, again, tell us how AFSC and your Investigate project can help replicate these kinds of actions elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. So on investigate.info, we collect routinely information about companies that are involved specifically in the Israeli occupation. So specific human rights violations as part of the Israeli occupation, like the bombings of Gaza, like home demolitions, like illegal settlements in the West Bank. And if folks have some insider information like we had in Hayward about the city's investments, then we can intersect those lists and see, okay, which are the problematic companies that we want to target. But I want to say, in a lot of cases, like George said earlier, this information is not available. A lot of cities and a lot of investors in general are very secretive and they don't have to disclose their investments, and so they don't. And that shouldn't hold us back, because most cities in the United States, the vast majority, by far, actually don't have any criteria, any social criteria, anything that limits the investments from a social or human rights standpoint. So even if we don't know what the city is particularly invested in, getting a resolution that says, okay, the city will examine its own investments and report on them to the public and start a process to say, okay, we don't want to be invested in genocide and apartheid. Maybe we also don't want to be invested in other social harms, in tobacco, in weapons in general, in fossil fuels, of course. So, you know, this is a process that can start at the city level to do something that, like George said, is very, very straightforward. Like, what do we want our money to support in the world? In a way, this is what BDS is all about. And, you know, BDS, because of a long time, well-organized state campaign by the state of Israel against it, became some kind of demon. You know, BDS is like seen as very radical and very almost violent to some people. But in a way, it's very straightforward. You know, we live in the United States. It's the belly of the beast in terms of support for Israel. You know, it sends by far more weapons to Israel right now than all the other countries combined, and has been doing so for decades. Of course, also supports Israel in the diplomatic arena internationally. And so we are already have taken sides, maybe not ourselves as individuals, but our system, the system that we live in, has already taken a side. And so the only thing that BDS is asking us is actually to become neutral, to not support just one side of this bloody conflict, which is of course the main aggressor over the decades.
So it's investigate.info, and how can people get in touch with the American Friends Service Committee?
So we have a website, of course, like all good organizations, afsc.org. And if you want to reach me specifically, you can go to investigate and hit the contact us button on investigate.info, and that will be an email that I see specifically if you want to work on divestment specifically from an investment portfolio.
Wonderful. And Alexis and George, if people want to get in touch with the Hayward activist coalition that you co-founded 4 years ago, where can they go?
They can go to heycoco.org. George, correct me if I get any of this wrong. It's HAYCOCOA.org. And we have interest forms and contact forms for people to reach out. And we're also on Instagram, and is it called X now? I'm not on that.
Soon. Yeah.
All of our handles are at heycoco, HAYCOCOA on Instagram, Twitter/X, and Facebook. And I'm also reachable at Haystack George if anybody's interested in learning about how I navigated council. And I think the last note I want to add here to Noam's point, and what I want to encourage activists to think about, is that every approach is going to be a little different. I don't want folks to fall into a one size fits all. I've been asked a lot, do you have a template of that resolution? And again, every city is different. And so some creativity, some research is required, but that shouldn't deter us from getting this across the finish line.
Well, thank you all so much for being with us on the Electronic Intifada podcast. George Serap, Noam Perry, Alexis Villalobos, and we look forward to more activists getting inspired and passing resolutions like the one in Hayward in January. Thank you all so much for everything you do and for being with us on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.